Thank you for joining me for the East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Cicely Tiernan. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Tempe and Ahwatukee. Ahwatukee Foothills News. Kyrene panel to study two options with school closures by Paul Marianak, AFN Executive Editor. The Long Range Planning Committee studying Kyrene School District's vacant school space problem has settled on two options for further study that both involve closing as many as six elementary campuses and possibly a middle school as well. Those options include looking at the district in terms of regions broken down by Kyrene's six middle school service areas and examining potential redesigns of school configurations, possibly moving away from the district's current K through 5 middle school concepts to a K through 8 structure. Both options also could involve closing 3 to 7 elementary schools and possibly reducing the district's region to 5 areas by shutting one of its 6 middle schools. The panel's decision May 21st followed several hours of discussion of 4 options. The rejected options involve minimal change and capacity driven. All 4 options are driven by the district's need to reduce spending because of continuing enrollment decline across all 25 Kyrene campuses. The 56-member committee will now spend its next 2 monthly meetings examining the 2 options it chose as it prepares a recommendation for the governing board. Enrollment over the last 25 years has slid from a high of nearly 20,000 at the beginning of the century to a current of 12,849, and a demographer predicts pupil count could drop to 11,451 by the end of this decade. Because most state aid is tied to pupil count, the district not only has had to cut spending while trying to maintain a quality education, it also has seen occupancy rates at 8 schools slide below 50% and hovering at only half full at 2 other schools. According to demographer Rick Brammer, 8 Kyrene schools this year are operating at less than half their capacity. Cerritos, Esperanza, Estrella, Wagoner, Kyrene Traditional Academy, Manitas, Centennial, and Pueblo. 3 other schools are barely past the halfway point. Lomas, 51%, Mayeno, 50%, and Niños, 53%. However, no specific schools were cited in any of the options the committees discussed. In fact, the panel was specifically told not to consider individual schools at this time. The committee is charged with making a recommendation to the board on how to deal with diminishing occupancy rates in schools created by the enrollment decline. District officials have stressed that whatever the board decides, it can reject the committee's recommendation. No action will be taken in the upcoming school year to close any campuses. Indeed, even if the board opts for closures, which appear likely to be recommended, officials said it could take several years of meetings with school neighbors, parents, and other stakeholders before any campus was shut down. At the May 21st meeting, the committee examined the issue of vacant space from several different perspectives with the same starting point. To preserve the Kyrene experience makes it one of the top districts in Arizona. While balancing the budget, the projected enrollment decline will require a $7 million reduction in spending by 2029 to 2030. Kyrene School District, built to serve 20,000 students, expects enrollment to drop to 11,000 to 12,000 over the next 5 years, resulting in a projected $7 million funding loss, the panel was told. This decline necessitates a strategic, sustainable restructuring of facilities, resources, and systems to preserve educational quality and student experience. The panel evaluated 4 possible approaches to resolving space through the lens of 5 guiding principles. They included focusing on the next 2 to 5 years to achieve a balanced budget and create better resource schools. build a plan that looks at school facilities as a key driver of long-term financial and educational sustainability, find a solution that makes the most progress towards school district goals while impacting the fewest students with a plan that would be rolled out over multiple years, and measure the impact of any decision on all students and families. The plan was then asked to consider four possible options from which it would select two for further study. Capacity driven. This involved what one moderator called being hyper-focused on filling up schools. This approach would let the district budget be the guide so that the school closures would be based on saving the most money on maintenance and staffing and lead to the highest occupancy rates at schools. That approach could involve closing 6 to 9 elementary schools for a savings of between $3 million and $7.2 million, and 1 to 2 middle schools for a savings between $800,000 and $2.6 million, or some combination of the two types of facilities. Minimal change. This approach would involve combining grades on those campuses that host both an elementary and middle school. This option could involve restricting those sites to a K-8 model instead of the current K-5 and grades 6-9 structure. Under this option, 3 to 5 elementary schools could be shut down, but no middle schools would be affected. The savings achieved would be impacted by the school's structure. Operating under the current structure of K-5 and 6-8 would save between $600,000 and $2.5 million, while a K-8 structure would save between $1.5 million and $4 million. Regional approach. This option would involve looking at the service areas for each of the district's 6 middle schools and thinking of them as regions. Possible approaches could involve taking one middle school away and creating 5 regions, or closing an elementary school in each of the current 6 service areas. This approach has a high potential for savings through reduced personal costs, the panel was advised, though capital and building operation cost savings would depend on what happens with the closed facilities. Under this approach, closing 6 to 7 elementary schools could save between $3 million and $5.6 million. Closing one middle school could save an additional $800,000 to $1.1 million. Redesign. This approach would focus on reimagining school configurations to improve grade transitions, align instruction, and create future learning communities. It would need to be paired with one of the other 3 options to determine the number of schools that would be closed. While this approach likely would impact every school in the district, it also posed the potential for new enrollment drivers, such as creating a gifted academy or early childhood center. It also poses the potential for consolidating schools through redesigning grade levels from the current structure to a K-8 structure. The panel was advised that Kyrene's current K-5/6-8 is the most common in the country because middle school aligns with the adolescent development progression, and the 3-year middle school cycle allows for development of a sense of belonging and identity. On the other hand, K-8 minimizes transitions for kids and allows for stronger continuity for schools academically, and it does foster slightly better academic outcomes for middle school grades, one of the moderators noted. One other idea floated involved a grade reconfiguration to K-4 and 5-8. While this structure would give fifth graders stronger community and continuity, the panel was told students in grade 5 may face some social or academic pressures prematurely. Still, another tweak could involve a K-2, 3-5, and 6-8 grade confirmation to create highly focused instruction at each grade level. You'd have teachers who can collaborate deeply with one another as it's narrowed, focused on the grade levels in that space, a moderator said. You could really optimize classroom size and resources. However, that would risk dips every time you move to a new building. In particular, third grade and sixth grade and the flow of information would look different in the transition between teachers, one of the moderators said. Kyrene administration advised that fewer transitions for students between buildings benefit student achievement, especially in mathematics and the transition years. Configurations that keep students in one school longer often see higher sixth grade and seventh grade achievement and smoother progress than those with extra transitions. Research slightly favors broader grade spans, fewer transitions, for academic continuity in performance in K through 8, with many studies showing K through 8 or K through 6 configurations marginally outperforming traditional middle schools. However, the differences tend to even out by the end of eighth grade if the middle schools are high quality. Often, the most effective configuration academically is the one that a district supports with coherent curriculum and strong transition programs. Moderators told the panel members that as they considered which of the two options should be further pursued, you can't start talking about individual Kyrene schools. You don't have other information yet that you would need to really push into the space right now, and that we're trying to do is narrow our focus. After breaking into smaller groups to further discuss the four options, then voting on what they preferred, various subgroups had widely different viewpoints on each approach's benefits and drawbacks. Some worried that a regional approach was not workable because the student population in each varied greatly. But another subgroup felt a regional approach offered the best chance of combining other ideas to achieve the district's goals for students. Superintendent Laura Toneas said a regional approach would likely require one elementary school closing in each of the six districts, adding there was a reason that approach was offered to the panel. Overall, we know that there's enough of an enrollment decline that it's not just in one area of the district, Toneas said. It is across the district and it impacts every region. Every one of our middle schools after the fifth year will be well below capacity. So it's not like we don't need to close any middle schools. If we don't, we'd be operating smaller middle schools. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Cicely Tiernan. Continuing on, Tempe Tribune. 20-story apartment project moves to Tempe City Council, by Lee Chappelle, Tribune contributing editor. The Tempe Development Review Commission, on a 6-0 vote, May 13, recommended to City Council that it approve the development plan review, including site plan, building elevations, and landscape plan, for a twin 20-story complex on 3.6 acres on the southeastern corner of Rural Road and University Drive. Council, in December, in an unusual two-step process, had approved a rezoning request for the LEO, despite not having the project's development plan review nor a traffic impact study. The council hustled through the rezoning that would allow the project after Nick Wood of Snell & Wilmer, the zoning attorney for Chicago-based Upcampus Student Living, said the site consists of parcels owned by four people. One of them was adamant that he wouldn't sell to Upcampus unless the necessary zoning change was obtained before the end of calendar 2024 for tax planning purposes. In addition to the two apartment towers designed for Arizona State University students, the project would include 14,000 square feet of ground level retail space. The project would be topped with amenity decks and include a 10-story parking garage. The Leo would have 786 units with 2,300 bedrooms. Among them would be 106 studio apartments, 18 one-bedroom, 193 two-bedroom, 86 three-bedroom, and 383 four-bedroom units. DRC commissioners questioned whether the complex at an already congested intersection, which two of them called the worst intersection in Arizona, was wise. Wood pointed out that because the Leo will be populated by college students, there will be only moderate vehicular traffic, although he conceded that there will be an increase in foot, bicycle, and scooter traffic in the area. Developer UpCampus plans to install a four-way traffic signal at the eastern end of the complex to help mitigate that and take pressure off rural university. The Leo, as with other large apartment complexes in the ASU area, will rent by the bedroom rather than by the unit. Residents will share the common kitchen and living areas. Initially named Nova Tempe, a change was made in deference to similarity in the name of the Novus Innovation Corridor directly across Rural Road on the ASU campus. Planned initially for 30 stories, UpCampus scaled back on the project at the city's request to be more compatible with nearby apartment buildings of 24 and 18 stories. A Chevron gas station and small retail center that includes four restaurants would be raised to make way for the Leo. One of the restaurants, Gus's New York Pizza, popular among students, has expressed a desire to move into the new commercial space, and others might as well, according to Wood. The Leo would be cutting edge with its solar panels on 20% of the roof, 50 electric vehicle charging stations, three areas for rideshare pickup and drop-off, including one in the garage that separates the towers, pools, pickleball court, jogging track, dog area, voluntary green code compliance, lush landscaping that would change in the face of the intersection, and what Wood calls really neat architecture. We have different colors. We have depth, articulation. We have movement, Wood said. And you can see what they've done in that pedestrian realm at the edge of the grade level, two levels of glass columns and landscaping. Although the Valley Metro light rail is across the street, as is the ASU campus, there will be bike lockers in each building. We want these kids to use bikes, Wood said. The developer plans curb cutout for buses to minimize traffic disruptions along University and Rural. Acknowledging the vacancies and ground floor commercial space at other Tempe developments, Wood said UpCampus has hired a national retail brokerage firm to help land tenants. Tempe Mayor Corey Woods in December said that the project would have positive impacts beyond addressing housing. On the restaurant front, what I would love about this is that it makes it so that the development is not just simply for the students who will live at the development, but it's also providing amenities for the people who live in Tempe and that area, Wood said. I think it's critical that all these developments try to incorporate elements so that people of all different generations and backgrounds can really enjoy it, and that it's adding value to the city as a whole. Tempe Tribune. Early returns favorable as massive I-10 rebuild ends, by Lee Chappelle, Tribune contributing editor. You sat in more stop-than-go traffic on Interstate 10 as the way home from work while you resisted the urge or not to hurl epithets. That's the way it was. The way it is now, as Arizona Department of Transportation mops up its nearly four-year rebuild of the valley's busiest freeway. 11 miles from I-17 through the Broadway curve to the Loop 202 interchange in Ahwatukee. Better. It's fresh, so it's going to take time to assess how much better. ADOT has finished the heavy lifting. The new traffic lanes, interchanges, and bridges are done. What remains is landscaping, lane striping, signage, lighting, and completion of ramps that lead to two new pedestrian cyclist bridges over I-10, which ADOT hopes to complete by June 1. It is the largest rebuild of a freeway in ADOT history. We are just so happy that all of the major components of the project are done, the big stuff, and we are now just focusing really on the cosmetics part of the project, said Marcy McKinnon, ADOT spokeswoman. We are over the moon about it with how well this project has gone. We've already gotten a lot of positive feedback, so we're glad to hear that the difference is very noticeable from 4 years ago. Finally, relief. For drivers who for years endured not only weekday traffic jams of traffic at rush hour on an outdated freeway, but then also closures and restrictions on weekends during construction, the misery is over. When Interstate 10 was built through the Broadway curve in the mid-1960s, the valley had a population of about 80,000. Today, it is 5 million. ADOT estimates that 300,000 vehicles use the stretch of freeway every day. In the coming 15 years, ADOT estimates the number will rise to 375,000 a day. The average speed on eastbound I-10 from I-17 to US 60 during afternoon rush hour before the rebuilding project was 32 miles per hour, ADOT said. Without the project, that speed was projected to decrease to 29 miles per hour by the summer and trend downward over time. With the I-10 Broadway Road Improvement Project completed, average speed is projected to increase to 40 miles per hour this summer. According to Maricopa Association of Governments economic evaluation in 2020, improvements from the project will save motorists 2.5 million hours annually that otherwise would have been spent in traffic, totaling $130 million a year in time savings due to quicker commutes. There's good news for ADOT too, according to McKinnon. We are expected to be under budget, she said. ADOT had paid out $639 million through early May, according to McMacken. The figure will rise slightly when work is completed and contractors receive their final checks in June. What's new? With the addition of main traffic lanes, high occupancy vehicle lanes, and collector distributor roads for local traffic, capacity on I-10 has increased by 60% through the Broadway curve. What taxpayers got for their money? I-10 widened to 6 general purpose lanes and 2 high occupancy vehicle lanes in each direction from US 60 Superstition Freeway west to Interstate 17. I-10 widened to 4 general purpose lanes in each direction from Railroad North to US 60. New wider bridges over the freeway at Broadway Road and 48th Street. Wider bridge over Salt River. Roadway improvement on approximately 1 mile in both directions of US 60 Superstition Freeway from I-10 to Hardy Drive. Roadway improvement on approximately 1 mile in both directions of State Route 143 Hohokam Expressway from I-10 to the southern end of the State Route 143 bridge over the Salt River. Addition of collector distributor roads next to I-10 from Baseline Road west to 40th Street to separate through traffic on the freeway from local traffic entering or exiting at Broadway, State Route 143 to Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport and 48th Street. Complete rebuild of I-10 State Route 143 interchange with direct connections to and from State Route 143 via flyover bridges to I-10. Two bridges for pedestrians and bicyclists over I-10 at Alameda Drive and the Western Canal, and improving the Sun Circle Trail crossing at Guadalupe Road. Sound and retaining walls where warranted. An LA twist. The collector distributor roads are the most unique element of the project that get existing and entering traffic off the main through lanes via what amounts to a parallel mini freeway for local traffic. There used to be a mad scramble where traffic off westbound I-10 heading for Broadway Road or State Route 143 to the airport had to cross several lanes of traffic to the right in less than a mile, where traffic entering I-10 west from US 60 was crisscrossing as those drivers were moving left to get onto the I-10 through lanes. Collector distributors relieve most of the stress with dedicated lanes. Reducing the need for lane changes enhances safety, according to McMacken. There was a learning curve for motorists, though. The feedback on them has been amazing, McMacken said. In the beginning, it was a new concept for many drivers because we've never had that in the Phoenix area. Our educational campaign was launched over a year ago, letting the drivers know what these roads were and how to use them. Nobody around here had seen it unless they'd been to LA or places like that. And I think it did take people a while to figure it out. The first couple of times through, even for me, and I've been to LA a lot, there was that learning curve because it was just so different. Now they are being used to as they should be, and it's made a difference. The project was funded largely by revenue from a half-cent transportation sales tax, Proposition 400, that voters countywide approved in 2004. MAG, the regional transportation planner, identified the need to reduce travel times on I-10 during peak hours, improve airport access, support ride-sharing and transit with more HOV lanes, and to prepare the region for future growth projections. And that's all we have time for today. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcastinfo and audio/on-demand. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News. For Tempe and Ahwatukee, I'm your volunteer reader, Cicely Tiernan. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.